Once again, the federal government has warned us away from romaine lettuce. But wait, some say the odds of getting sick from lettuce are only 1 in 11 million. And so, let us eat lettuce. That leads us to ask, is our produce safe to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,171st edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paris who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, we are once again warned not to eat romaine lettuce, which of all the varieties of lettuce is one of our favorites. The reason is an E. coli outbreak that sickened 65 people in 12 states. 6 months ago, give or take, the feds finger pointed to an outbreak in the end-of-season winter lettuce harvested in Arizona. And after giving that outbreak considerable thought, the feds said the problem was most likely caused by some bad water trickling out of a confined animal feedlot. This time, the feds' finger is pointing to at the end of season summer lettuce harvested from California's central coast, where romaine is a $655 million a year business and one of the reasons for the area's proud appellation, Salad Bowl of the World. There are no confined animal feeding operations in the area, and no cause for the E. coli contamination has yet been identified. The feds are saying it's now safe to eat top of the winter harvest lettuce from Arizona, but in spite of what the feds say, it's very hard to find a good bundle of romaine in the grocery stores, especially those around the Salad Bowl of the World. In fact, people seem to be downright skittish about eating lettuce. We even hear that romaine is being joked about on daytime TV. Specifically, it was the Ellen Show with Martha Stewart. They got into a little rubbing of the romaine the other day. But wait, you know, our friends in the industry say the odds are so small, insignificant, 1 in 11 million chances of getting sick from eating lettuce. And so today we're going to ask them, is our produce safe to eat? Here to help us pick up this conversation, we have Jim Prever, who is a founder and editor-in-chief of Produce Business Magazine. Welcome to the Food Chain, Jim.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Produce Magazine, I have one in my hand, nice-looking magazine, probably as slick as anything I've seen, which leads me to believe that this is a healthy industry.
It's a healthy industry, but it's a little less healthy than it was before the Centers for Disease Control decided to ban romaine.
Yeah. So, and it did take a hit, and it has taken a hit, a couple of hits lately, and that's where we're going to be going. You know, you have a couple of interesting pieces, fun reading your stuff, by the way, one of which was The Road Less Traveled. What led you, Jim Prever, to take this road less traveled in the produce industry, starting a magazine?
Well, my family had been active in the produce industry, buying and selling. We were wholesalers in New York and exporters and importers of fruits and vegetables. And I grew up working in my family's business, but I was anxious to help upgrade the industry. I felt there was lots of opportunities as people were getting more educated and learning more about the industry to offer a publication that would focus in on marketing, merchandising, management, procurement, and help the industry do a better job of serving consumers. And so I launched Produce Business.
Good. Now, who reads the magazine?
It's principally read. It's edited, I should say, for the buying end of the industry. So that's supermarkets, it's restaurant chains, it's distributors, exporters, etc. But it's read throughout the whole chain by producers, marketers, and ancillary people to the industry, like cooling facilities and so forth. So it's basically the entire produce supply chain.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that a good percentage of the advertisers seem to be those who are in the production end, correct?
Yes, typically the readers are the buyers and the advertisers are the sellers.
So what we have here is a real insight into the industry talking with itself.
Exactly.
Good. Yeah, good. So Wall Street Journal ran across this interesting op-ed that you penned, Let Us Try Not to Panic. And I was wondering if you actually came up with that title, or was it the Wall Street Journal?
No, I unfortunately did not come up with that great title, so I have to give that credit to them. They did a great job on that.
Well, and they was pretty sympathetic with the industry as well. Let us try not to panic, and yet we panicked. Why is it that we panic the way we do, we consumers out here? Why are we so frightened? Why do we get so frightened so quickly, I guess?
The problem is really that the public health authorities have adopted a zero risk acceptance on food. And that's not something that we do anywhere else in life. Every day when you get into your car, when you get on an airplane, when you do any of a thousand things, you're accepting some level of risk. But the public health authorities want to give the impression that consumers need not think about food. It's all 100% safe 100% of the time. And frankly, that's not true. And it's not just produce. Raw food in general, whether that is a raw egg, produce, meat, fish, raw food has not been treated with a kill step, such as cooking, and therefore there's always the possibility of pathogens being on those products. It's very rare in the case of produce, but it can happen. And of course, different consumers are susceptible to these things at different levels. So a healthy young person might have a stomach ache when something like this happens. But if you happen to have been undergoing a stem cell transplant and have been had your immune system destroyed by chemotherapy, the same pathogen that normally would cause a stomach ache could kill you.
Right. And so that's probably why we freak out, is because we see those people and we get frightened. And people are frightened anyway. We're kind of like a herd animal, I think. We're like deer in the forest, and one of us sees a lion and everybody runs for it.
Well, the CDC has a funny thing. When there's a problem, they don't actually say what the problem is. In other words, they don't issue an announcement that because there has been pathogens found on a particular product, we're estimating the odds of someone getting sick have increased from 8 million to 1 to 6 million to 1. They don't actually say what the problem is. Instead, they make a recommendation. In this case, they advise that restaurants ought to not sell romaine, retailers should not sell romaine, and consumers should not consume romaine. But it's kind of a silly thing because it's an arbitrary recommendation. It's as if they issued a thing that people should not go skiing because there is some risk that you could hit a tree or die or something like that, which is true. But who wants the government to be issuing all these recommendations? It might be helpful if they give us information, but their opinions on what we should or shouldn't do are not that valuable and usually just lead to this kind of mass panic.
And there we are. There were deer running from the lions, right? We know there's a lion in the woods somewhere, so we're just going to run for it. Now, how do we know it was romaine and not iceberg?
Well, the way the CDC works is they're always out there doing surveys of healthy people in America and basically asking them what they ate last week, where they ate it, et cetera, et cetera. And then if people are getting sick, those people are identified genetically by having the same type of illness, and then they're interviewed. And when they're interviewed, they look for a discrepancy between the surveys of healthy people and the surveys of the sick people. It can be a place. If 60% of the American population says they ate at McDonald's last week, but 99% of the sick people say that they ate at McDonald's, that's going to be the target that the CDC is going to look at. Or it could be a food. In this case, there was a higher percentage of sick people who said they ate romaine in the last week than healthy people. And that led them to focus on romaine.
Good. And we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'd like to talk about the odds that you expressed in the Let Us Not Try Not to Panic op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Long, long odds. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Jim Trevor and you right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it happened again, second time in about a half a year or so. They say it's romaine lettuce that causes the E. coli outbreak in 12 states, I guess, and around the country. So how safe is our produce? And what read a wonderful op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that said the odds make it pretty darn safe. 1 in 11 million? And that's if there's an epidemic, right, Jim?
Yes, that's saying at this time, while the epidemic was active. And that was really the odds of just getting sick. If you were talking about serious illnesses that people would get that would put them in the hospital, that was 1 in 28 million. You know, if you put this in perspective, and we talked about this a little in the article, getting a royal flush in poker, well, that's 1 in 649,000. So, you know, it's such a dramatic difference from anything that we know. An amateur getting a hole-in-one in golf, hundreds of times a great, 1 in 12,000. For that matter, if you're really that risk-averse, say you don't want to eat lettuce, better stay away from dogs. The lifetime odds of getting killed by a dog attack are about 1 in 112,000. You can get struck by lightning in a particular year. That the odds are better than 1 in 1 million.
So, you know, that really leads me to the ultimate question. How on earth is it possible for people, for example, in New York or Bismarck, North Dakota, how is it possible for us to eat fresh salads and fresh produce every day of the year and have the odds of getting sick be so incredibly long that it's virtually impossible to get sick? How does this industry do it?
Well, the industry is really an amazing thing, and it doesn't get the credit it should. In the last decade or two, farmers have really focused in on food safety. It's always been very safe, but what has happened is we have a lot better ability to identify illnesses today and identify outbreaks than we ever did. Mm-hmm. It used to be if there was an outbreak, it was typically at like a church supper or a wedding, because that was the only way we could identify it. Hundreds of people coming in to their doctors and hospitals saying, "Oh my God, I was sick. I ate at."
It was the potato salad at the church picnic.
Exactly, yeah. And now that's not necessary. We have very sophisticated tools, and we're able to put together outbreaks that were never known before. It's not that they didn't happen. We just never identified them. So, of course, this is not good for business, and, of course, the industry doesn't want to hurt anyone. So, of course, they've refocused in on every way possible of making food safer. And so They've added things like buffer zones. They've put more traps in to catch animals. They've put more fences in to block animals. They've done all kinds of things to make sure workers engage in proper sanitation. They've started testing water much more frequently. So many different things that they're doing to make food safe. And in fact, food comes from all over the world, not just grown in America. And it's not that it's 99% safe. You know, it's 99.99999% safe. As I said in this article, even with an active outbreak, like what's going on in the most recent romaine situation, if you ate one salad a day, on average, you'd be hospitalized due to E. coli once every 77,000 years. That's incredibly safe.
And almost amazingly so. Take us through the industry. You said it comes from, your food produce now comes from all over the world. In general, I suppose it's safe to say food or produce is now grown where it's easiest and most efficient to grow. Is that fair enough?
Well, that's true. And also what has happened is we now have an expectation of having supplies 12 months a year. So we are going to grow grapes down in Chile or in Peru and bring them in the winter when California can't grow that crop. And of course, there's some items we have to import year-round, like tropicals, such as bananas. So food is coming from all over the place, and it's meeting all the standards required, not only for the U.S., but typically for other important countries like Japan and Europe, where they're shipping as well. And all these places have very rigorous food safety standards that have to be met.
So let's kind of run that through. For example, you talked about seasonal produce. Well, if with respect to romaine, we have the summer growing season here in California's Central Coast. And in the winter, we're down on the border with Mexico and in Mexico growing the produce. So it has to be harvested. That's probably the second step, right? You grow it, then you harvest it. Take us through the food chain all the way to New York City. Since that's where you have your experience.
You know, it starts with the genetics. What is the seed we're going to choose? And you are choosing things for the best flavor, for shipability, for the best growing yield, all that. And you start with that. You grow it. Of course, it's got to be harvested. Depending on the item, it can be either packed in the field as it's being harvested, or it's brought into a packing house where it will be packed there. Usually, as part of that procedure, there's a pre-cooling thing to get rid of the heat from the field and make sure that it will make a great arrival in New York or Boston or wherever it's going. Then after it's packed, it's going to be put on some mode of transportation. That might be a railroad, it might be a truck. Sometimes we're shipping overseas and getting business overseas for American farmers, so it's going to go on a boat or a plane.
You know, I heard a wonderful story about the first time they tried to ship iceberg lettuce to the East Coast from California. And they evidently loaded up a boxcar and then filled it up with ice and then raced the train to the East Coast. But by the time it got to the East Coast, it was a iceberg lettuce soup. And so it was a complete disaster, but we figured out how to do that.
Yes, I was very involved in shipping iceberg lettuce to Europe, and my family was sort of a pioneer in that. And, you know, there are a lot of mistakes that get made along the way. You have to learn what temperature is acceptable, where it will make a good arrival, and how to maintain it that way, how to transfer it sometimes into from an over-the-road truck, for example, to an ocean-going container. All different things to look at and find new ways of doing things. And one thing about the produce industry, it's an industry of continuous improvement. And that's true on food safety, it's true on traceability, it's true on sustainability, it's also true on flavor and cost. You know, one of the miracles of the produce industry is that it's able to feed people at such a reasonable price. One of the things that I mentioned in the article, most of our knowledge of food safety is not complete. So we may know as a general principle, well, the more frequent you have traps or the more frequent you check the water or the bigger the buffer zones, the safer it is. But there's no one point where we can say, ah, if it's a 100-foot buffer zone, you will never, ever have a problem. So what happens is we're always improving in small ways, year after year, decade after decade, and we continue to provide Americans and people around the world with delicious, healthy food, safer and safer. And, you know, one of the big challenges here is it's so easy to point fingers and say, oh, there was a problem there. But what was the alternative? The people who didn't eat romaine?
You could eat sagebrush, I guess, right? We're going to have to take a quick break here, Jim, but when we come back, I'd like you to talk about, you know, about the big improvement that we've made, which is ready-to-eat salads. Wow. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Jim Prever of the Produce Business Magazine, and we're talking about produce. Is our produce safe? Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, if you think about all of the people who eat produce, who eat a fresh salad every day, you have to marvel at just how safe the industry is. Yet, once in a while, something happens. And something did happen recently with the summer harvest, the end of the season summer harvest in the California Central Valley. And a few months ago, it happened at the end of the winter harvest season down in the border. So we're asking today, is our produce safe? And Jim Prever, who is the founder and editor of Produce Business Magazine, I'm going to guess you're going to say it's pretty darn safe, Jim.
Well, it is by any practical standard of safety. You know, people go out and they decide, I'm going to go skydiving, and the government doesn't say, we recommend against that activity. You know, everything can have risks. You can go swimming and you can drown. You know, there's so many things that have a risk in life. Rare are the things we can say we do that are completely without risk. So it's just an expectation that has to be managed. These items are so safe. You could eat them for thousands and thousands of years, and you would never have a need to be hospitalized or deal with any illness.
Well, it seems like if you're going to make, you know, increase the odds or increase, it would be to increase the difficulty of keeping things safe, it would be to add complexity to it. And I'm thinking of how the industry took to putting produce together with other produce, putting them in a bag with cheese and crackers and salad dressing. So all you have to do is open that bag and mix things up, and you've got yourself a ready-to-eat salad. That's relatively recent development, is it not?
Yeah, we're talking about things that mostly have transpired over the last 20 years or 30 years. Although there have been people chopping celery and things like that for 100 years. It's definitely a situation where you add complexity, you add some risk. But the truth is that the produce industry is made up of professionals who work actively to manage this risk. The real risk out there is in mom's kitchen, to tell you the truth, because the typical person in their own house, they're not experts on food safety, and it's very easy for them to say, cut a raw chicken with a knife, which tremendously has tremendous odds that you'll pick up some salmonella. and then forget that they have to sterilize that knife before they're going to cut lettuce. Mm-hmm. Or before they're going to slice a melon. Or they're going to put things in their refrigerator in such a way where, say, some raw chicken juice will fall down on some meat that's already been cooked. There's lots of things that consumers do in their own homes that certainly can cause foodborne illnesses. In general, the professionals at the fresh cut processing facilities, where everything is ultra sterilized and everything is monitored and audited and water is checked and so on and so forth, generally speaking, those things are far cheaper, and not only cheaper, but they're also far safer than if consumers do the same thing at home.
You know, somebody once asked President Trump about his proclivity for eating fast food like McDonald's. And he remarked that, well, it's safer. If you think about what McDonald's has to lose by having unsafe food, you know, they're going to do everything in their power to have the cleanest possible food in the world. And if you think about, you know, a mom and pop diner, maybe not so careful.
Well, the answer is that people like McDonald's have enormous reputational risk from a food safety crisis. So it's certainly in their interest to do everything they can to avoid such a problem. And that's why you have companies that are leaders in food safety are companies with this big reputational risk, like McDonald's, like Disney. All these companies are real leaders in this field, and that is why they know that there is no upside for them in cheaping out or of saving money by not doing the right thing, because they'll pay for it 100 times later on.
Yeah, we can think of a certain Mexican fast food facility that really took it on the chin because of several foodborne contamination issues. But that's the case. I guess maybe they'll learn their lesson there. So we take these things out of the field, and we're doing things like putting them in bags and getting really complicated, and yet we seem to be doing pretty good with that. We ship them clear across the country by truck mostly, or train?
Mostly by truck today.
Mm-hmm. And so we get them all the way across the country. That's a long ways. So these trucks must be pretty technically adept at shipping cold storage.
Oh, yes. You know, temperature control is very important. And by the way, it's not just across the country. I was over in Hong Kong and Singapore recently, and you saw some of the same brands that we see, Fresh Express, Dole, that was shipped from California. Because they want safe and high-quality lettuce mixes there, too.
There it is. So they must not ship by ship, though. They must fly it.
That type of product they would fly, yes.
Yeah.
It depends on the item. Some items, whole fruit and things like that, will tend to be shipped by boat. But the lettuce is light and very perishable, so they'll fly it.
What about the... what happens when the romaine lettuce gets to New York City?
Well, it's going to go into a few different channels. There's the retail channel, and that's either going to be a distribution center owned by a retail chain like a Costco or Walmart or someone like that, or it could go into the food service channel. That supplies all the restaurants and hotels, and those are often big distributors like Sysco or U.S. Foods that you see their trucks around the country. It also can go to large wholesalers and distributors. There's a major market in the Bronx called the Hunts Point Market, which is the biggest market in the country for fresh fruits and vegetables, and they'll tend to supply a lot of independent retailers and a lot of independent restaurants. So there's many different ways it gets distributed across the country, but for the most part, it gets distributed quickly, efficiently, safely, and is out there every day for consumers to enjoy.
And then, of course, it gets into somebody's hands who prepares it and puts it on the table for somebody else to eat. And that would be the final link in that incredible long food chain. And we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask Jim Prever to talk about exactly how we keep that produce safe. What is the technologies, what are the steps that we have to take to watch over that produce and guard it and keep it safe as it travels all that distance from where it was grown to where it is eaten? Long ways from California to Hong Kong, long ways from California to New York City. Wow. And we do it, and it, we keep the food safe somehow. How? Right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, Jim, we talked briefly a while ago about what it takes to keep the food safe. But I kind of like to go through that one more time here. First of all, you start with the professionals in the industry. It seems like everybody up and down that giant food chain has it in their best interest to keep the food safe. Starts there, right?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, first of all, these are people, and on an individual basis, nobody wants to be involved in seeing anyone get hurt from consuming their product, especially the farmers who are so proud of what they produce. But also on a business reputation level, you won't be in business very long if consumers perceive you to not be producing safe food. So there's every incentive to do all they can to make it right.
Now, I would suspect that if you were to go out into the farm country and travel around, meet farmer and farmer, I bet they watch each other pretty closely, I bet.
Well, one of the things in the industry, generally speaking, food safety is not considered a competitive edge. Whenever anyone develops a new way or new method or new tool that can help make us have safer food, the incentive is very strongly to share that and to make sure your neighbors and industry associations and so forth are all up on this. Because after all, when something like this romaine thing happens, it affects everyone in the industry, not just the people who did something wrong or who had a problem.
So in a very real sense, when it comes to food safety, everybody in the food chain is on the same team.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody's rooting for each other in this regard. And if somebody does mess up, I would suspect you probably don't want to show up down at the local watering hole if you do.
Well, that's true. But honestly, it's almost unheard of. When we have problems, the problems are rarely because someone in America did something wrong. Usually we don't know why it happened. It's a black swan event, as they say. You know, these products are grown outdoors typically. They can get a pathogen from a bird flying above who drops their business on top of it, an animal that runs through the field, a person from who's working in the fields, water, wind, insects. So many things could happen, but very, very rarely in the U.S. do we hear about a person who did something intentionally wrong. We have heard some of those problems in Chinese production, where not of produce, but of things like baby formula.
Right.
Where
melamine.
They've used items that are intentionally cheaper than what they are promising. But in America, thank God, we have not had that problem, and almost all of the problems that have existed are a function of happenstance, despite people following the best procedures, getting audited, etc.
Now, one incident that did happen a number of years ago happened in the spinach fields of the Central Coast and did cause quite a bit of damage. Some people died. Because of that incident, I think government stepped in and cast a real threatening eye on the industry, and the industry pulled itself together and developed what they call a leafy green marketing agreement, in which everybody has to pretty much comply with these rules and regulations, right?
Yes, there's a California organization and there's a sister organization down in Arizona, and together they look to enforce the best in food safety practices. The challenge is that these items are so safe that you can't actually be sure that making any of these changes will make a big difference. In other words, it sounds logical to say, oh, if we have a buffer zone and instead of it being 50 feet wide, we make it 100 feet wide, that will help us make things safer. But it's actually statistically really difficult to prove these things have any effect because it happens so rarely. These are things, you know, when you hear 10 people got sick, 20 people, 30, 40, 50, that sounds like a lot. But there's hundreds and hundreds of millions of servings of these products coming out every week or month, depending on the product. So it's not the type of thing where you can say there's any consistent pattern. It's such a rarity compared to the volume of these things that you scarcely know what to do. Thank God it's similar to getting on an airplane. Look, we just heard about a terrible plane crash out in Asia, and people died. It was awful, of course. But, you know, most people don't say, well, therefore I'll never fly again. They recognize that there is some risk to the activity, but it is very small because that one plane did crash and kill all these people. But on the same day, there were tens of thousands of planes. And, you know, over the week or month or year, many more.
And that's pretty analogous to what you're talking about with respect to food. Have a few people get sick, a few people died, but we still have to eat. And if we don't eat that wonderful produce, what on earth are we going to eat and where are we going to get it?
Well, and what would be the consequence? In other words, it's very possible that if people switch to another product that's not as healthy, over the long run, it may not produce that acute problem like we have with this food safety, but over the long run, they might die earlier because they're not eating as healthy and things of that sort.
Well, we're going to take one last quick break. Not much time left, but I'm going to ask Jim Prever the big question is, which is, of course, what can we as consumers do to, alleviate our fears a little bit and protect ourselves when we do eat fresh produce? Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, last half a year, we've seen two incidents in which we've had problems with romaine lettuce. People got sick in a number of different states around the country. And so we're kind of looking at the romaine industry and the lettuce industry and all of the produce and wondering just how safe that produce is. But we'd be talking with Jim Prever, who is the founder and editor-in-chief of Produce Business. We learned that, gosh, it's really, when you think about it, it's very, very safe. Odds are 1 in 11 million that you get sick eating lettuce. 1 in 11 million. Wow. So, but we're still frightened. And we make jokes about romaine lettuce. And when we go shopping, we see the romaine and we kind of scratch our head. What can we do, Jim, to alleviate the fear and uncertainty and make it safe, a little more safe for ourselves? How can we shop so that we can, you know, reduce even the odds to 1 in 50 billion?
Well, some of the issues are on a governmental and health policy level. The truth is, if the government wasn't scaring people half to death and was focusing on giving out actual information, like what the odds are, what they know, as opposed to making recommendations that they don't apply to cars or planes or any other part of life, people wouldn't be panicking as much to start with. As far as what consumers can do, there's a few things. Number one, Fresh food's enough for every single person in the country. If you have a compromised immune system, you're undergoing chemotherapy, you're very old, you're a tiny baby, those people probably should be eating cooked foods. So they can eat their fruits and vegetables, but they have to make sure that they are cooked. And that's wise for people with compromised immune systems. For most of the rest of us, it's a prudent thing still to wash your produce and do that appropriately and know how to do that so you don't cross-contaminate and things of this sort, to make sure in their own kitchens that they're not doing things like cutting their chicken with a knife and then cutting the lettuce, making sure that they're following proper safety practices in the home. And, of course, food should always be looked at. You don't have to buy everything that's for sale. You sometimes have to throw it out if you've left it in your refrigerator a little bit too long. One of the things about this, a real sadness, that so many people lost jobs picking romaine and packing it and things like that, is that the latest ruling from the CDC did nothing to help anyone, because the last person who got ill was known to get ill on October 31st, and they didn't tell people to not eat romaine until Thanksgiving. So one of the terrible things is that produce is usually thrown out. It's not who keeps, you know, romaine around for a month in their refrigerator.
Not so me.
By the time the CDC even is thinking about it, the produce is gone, so their recommendations are silly.
Well, Jim Prever, thank you so much for joining us today, giving us an overview of the produce industry and giving us a little encouragement to go out and eat some lettuce and live. Thank you very much for joining us. Folks, I guess we'll file this under Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. And agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you so much, Jim, and to see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.